from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1946, the first year of what is known as the baby boom generation. And by now you know that boomers are approaching or in retirement age, but you might not have known that 2015 marks the first time in history that at least 20% of New York residents are age 60 or older. It's known as the age wave, and it presents significant challenges for families and individuals. This hour, we're going to look into the solutions that our community might achieve if we're going to be successful in dealing with the age wave. After all, we're living longer thanks to medical care, eating habits, and more. That might mean we're working longer, or we might need more family help in our later years. We'd love to hear from you this hour. You can call the program 844-295-TALK, toll free 844-295-8255. And let me welcome my guests for the hour. Anne Marie Cook is the CEO of Lifespan. Anne Marie, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And Mary Rose McBride is here, the VP for Communications of Lifespan. Mary Rose, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We were talking before the hour began that Lifespan has got plenty going on with more boomers retiring and frankly, just more of us living longer and hopefully healthier, longer lives. How much has Lifespan had to grow, I'm curious, in over the years?
Well, it's been incredible growth. I'm going to just take you to the mid-1990s when we served about 5,000 older adults and caregivers each year. Today, it's almost 30,000. So really, when you're talking about a 20-year span, it's tens of thousands more older adults and caregivers we've served in just that period of time.
Largely because of everything we're talking about this hour, age wave and all that goes with it?
Age wave and all that goes with it. It's really been a tremendous sort of demographic shift that we have seen and we continue to see. And you mentioned really the year 2015, the year we're in, is really a tipping point year for New York State, in which for the first time ever, more than 20% of New York's population will be over the age of 60 for the first time ever. But even more significant, I think, is exponentially from there, it will begin to increase. So now we see one in five New Yorkers over the age of 60. In just a few short years, it'll be one in four. So we really are in an age wave in which we need to prepare.
Looking at some of the numbers, 44.7 million Americans as of July 1st, 2013, over the age of 65. And that's about 14% of the total population. But that number could be about 100 million people over the age of 65 in this country by the year 2060. And it's going to double, they think, in just over two decades, 25 years or so. So to the point, we're going to have to deal with it, our families, our parents, ourselves. Our children will eventually be dealing with it with us. And there's a lot of different ways to tackle this. But what I want to do is work through the biggest challenges that perhaps Lifespan defines and that other sort of experts in the field define, because they come in different forms. So let me start with a question then. What exactly is Lifespan? I know your community hears it a lot, but give me a definition for Lifespan.
So we're a nonprofit agency located here in Rochester, though we're serving more and more of the outer counties. We are dedicated to helping older adults and caregivers take on both the challenges as well as the opportunities of longer life. So we have a myriad of about 30 different services. We specialize in offering information, guidance for older adults and caregivers that's non-biased, meaning we have nothing to really sell. So we want to be the place where people call for information, whether it's about, I'm turning 65 and what do I do about Medicare, to, mom fell last week, she's in the hospital, they want to send her home, but I need support. You know, what's available?
What's the most common question you get?
Oh, my
Is it the 65 in Medicare?
Oh, boy. Yes, a lot.
Yes.
We have a session going on right now. We call it Medicare 101. We offer it once a month, and the room is packed every month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Navigating healthcare is always going to be a challenge. And that's obviously part of what Lifespan does. But look at some of the numbers that we find from various surveys. 33% of older Americans surveyed, and we're talking 60 or older, say, and by the way, I think 60 is young. I think 70, 70 80 is young. I just want to put that out there. So we say older. We say older than anyone younger than 60. How's that? 33% say their city or town is not preparing for the future needs of a growing population of people over the age of 60. Interestingly, even more of the group under the age of 16 has the same concern. So 45% of people under the age of 60 says, wherever you live in this country, Rochester, suburban areas, Finger Lakes, Maybe you live on the West Coast. No matter where you're listening to this program right now, a lot of people think that their town is not doing enough. And when you think about what does that mean, well, one of the bigger needs is transportation, job opportunities, and making sure people can work beyond what used to be the retirement ages.
Right.
So let's start there. 62 and a half, 65. Have we thrown that out by now, or is that still kind of a target goal?
You know, there's the federal guideline of what's an older adult, 60 and older. Most of our programs, you're eligible at 60. I'll tell you, my uncle called me screaming when he turned 65, about to turn 65, and got the Medicare letter that said, now that you're elderly, you know, that...
Has that language not changed?
No,
that has to...
it's you know, it's still pervasive. It's out there, but...
Oof.
One of the biggest challenges here in our community and in many is that a lot of older adults, 80% here in Monroe County, live in suburban areas. So they're aging in place in those areas, and so transportation becomes an issue when they need to get from where they live to the doctor's office, and they don't drive anymore. So that's one of the biggest things that we see. You know, people are aging in place in their homes, and they're not necessarily finding the services and supports they need to do that.
Out in San Francisco, there's a nonprofit called Partners in Care that reports, they say transportation is the number one unmet need. And they say cities have buses that seniors could take, but it's not always a good option because bus routes often require long walks either to or from the stops. There's often no benches to sit on while waiting. Special buses or disability vans aren't always the answer. They can help. But one of the trends that appears to be catching on, at least in some other cities, is volunteer transportation programs, often with seniors volunteering to drive other seniors. Yes?
Yes, that's true. And, you know, interestingly, I was in a national meeting, and transportation is a problem in San Francisco, Rochester, New York, and every other place, you know, for a lot of the reasons Mary Rose talked about. So we have really worked with a consortium of providers here to develop volunteer transportation opportunities, not only for folks who want to volunteer, but also to transport older adults to doctor's appointments, grocery stores, and needed services. So we have 400 volunteers in this community who transport older adults to various appointments. I know Lifespan alone does about 22,000 volunteer rides for older adults, and I'm going to tell you right now, it's not enough. So we've been working with a consortium of organizations to provide mobility management, really trying to figure out how to move people where they need to go. But it's a huge issue that we've begun to tackle, and we need a lot more work at it.
Need more volunteers? What do you need?
Volunteers.
We need a lot more volunteers to do this. And I think we also have to look at all the modes of transportation out there and to get everyone coordinated. So you'll see a lot of buses, for instance, in organizations that work for people with disabilities sitting idle at certain times. And how do we get everybody working on transportation in a coordinated fashion? It's a huge issue, but one we have to tackle.
Is it also an issue of, you know, I think of what has changed even in the past decade. So you go back 10 years ago, this is before the economic downturn of 2007, 2008, 2009. So a lot of folks had, you know, retirement accounts that they felt probably very sound about. They probably felt that if they had built any kind of a 401k or a nest egg, that it could last for a while. And now a lot of that has changed. It doesn't mean it's all gone, and a lot of it is bouncing back in some ways. But that was a big, big shock. I think of my own mother. I think of people in my family, 2007, 2008, 2009, saying retirement is not going to be possible for much longer. And we know that we're living longer and hopefully healthier. Year by year, we've seen lifespan increases in the last 50 years that are pretty remarkable for a number of reasons. Has that complicated the transportation picture? In other words, transportation, you talk about to doctors, for example, that's one thing. But how about just getting to work? Is that an issue?
Well, I think most older adults who can work, and a lot of older adults continue to have to work, typically have transportation to work. That's what we see.
Okay.
But, you know, I think it gets complicated when you look at some statistics such as women outlive their ability or decision to drive by 10 years. So that's a 10-year span just for women alone in which they can't drive anymore but still need to go places. Everybody needs to go places. So it's one stat, I think, in that sort of transportation realm in which there's a lot of people that need to just do daily activities.
Yeah, remarkable. Go ahead.
And again, they're aging in place in the suburbs where, you know, there's not a ton of bus transportation, you know, unless you come, you know, cross town or into the city and then go someplace else. So, you know, that's another huge problem.
But again, let's hit it one more time. If you had more volunteers, that would be a good start.
Huge start.
How do people volunteer?
Just give us a call.
Call
244-8400.
244-8400. It's as simple as saying, I've got some time. I'd like to help. I can transport.
Right. And we do, of course, vet people and run background checks. And, you know, then we actually give them out to this consortium of volunteer transportation providers. So you could basically almost probably volunteer geographically, you know, where you live within the same town or area.
Okay. So there, the number is 244-8400. 244-8400 if you wanted to volunteer or if you've called Lifespan before, you probably know the number with all the different questions. We're talking about the age wave, so to speak, with Anne-Marie Cook, the CEO of Lifespan, and Mary Rose McBride, the VP for Communications for Lifespan. And have you had a lot of people say to you, I thought I would have been able to retire by now. Things changed in the last 5 to 8 years. I can't retire.
I think that changed for a lot of people. And I think one of the reasons, you know, people, first of all, that trifecta of financial security in retirement has kind of gone away. So only about 20% of companies even offer a defined pension contribution anymore. So we're living off of savings and Social Security. And you've got to work longer in order to save more. And those last years make a really big difference. So now if you retire at 60, there's a really good chance you're going to live another 30 years. And you're going to live that in retirement. But the boomer generation is really changing that. Every survey that we've seen shows that 70 to 80% of boomers, they may want to stop working where they were, but they want to work in some capacity, whether it's for extra money or just for fulfillment. So they want to do something else. They want to find a part-time job that keeps them busy and provides some extra income. So, you know, whether or not those jobs are going to be there for boomers, that's another big question.
Well, Carl writes to the program and says, can you address ageism? There are plenty of boomers like me who would have loved to keep working, and I'm not talking about part-time, but ageism has prevented a lot of us from being able to work the jobs that we had for so long.
Yes, true.
I think that's true. And, you know, we actually were just talking about it, Mary Rose and I, in which sort of ageism is the last ism that's still acceptable. And, you know, when you look in TV and you look at newspaper cartoons and things like that, it's still appropriate to make fun of older adults, whatever you say, older adults. And I think that that, you know, leads into everything we do in terms of negative image of older adults and certainly impacts the workforce. And all the stats I've seen, if a person in their 50s needs to change job or look for a new job, it takes them 3 times longer with the exact same skills and resume as a younger person to get a job. And really, a lot of researchers just attribute that to just ageism. So it's a huge problem. We need to address it because older adults bring an incredible asset to businesses, not a drain.
How do we address it?
Well, you know, there's a lot of information out there about the positive effects of having boomers or older adults, you know, in your workplace. If the boomers all retired at the same, you know, and keep retiring, there's going to be a dearth of workplace experience, really, because it's such a large generation. So, you know, it's very difficult because being 55 today or 60 is so different than being 55 or 60 even 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. And it's a cultural change that needs to happen. You know, we started our celebration of aging 19 years ago. It's our big community luncheon to really highlight people who are role models for productive, engaged life past a certain age. And, you know, we do it so that we can keep changing this image of being 50 or 55 or 60 or 65 or even 80 or 85. Because there shouldn't be, you shouldn't be pigeonholed into, well, now you're elderly or, you know, anything like that. It's going to be, but it's cultural. You know,
I do have some hope that the boomers once again will change older adulthood like they've changed everything else coming up to this age. So they change schools and they change the image of everything as they have reached sort of, as they've gone through life. So right now the boomers are really hitting their second half of life. So all the boomers right now are over the age of 50. So my hope is, quite frankly, that the boomer culture that has existed throughout their entire lifespan will also hit older adulthood and change that.
You mentioned the last ism that's sort of acceptable as ageism. And first of all, I just have to say that if Medicare is still using the term elderly when you turn 65, they could probably set a little bit of a better tone. You know, we'll get them on the phone sometime and ask them about that. But next hour on this program, we're talking about what racism is and how we sort of tend to oversimplify what it is and what it means and how we have to confront the way our own biases work within us. That's on racism next hour. But if we're talking ageism right now, is it a matter of starting with the idea that we don't laugh at jokes about older people? Do we don't sort of tolerate that kind of, that we think it's harmless, but it can have a cumulative effect?
Yeah, I mean, look at the birthday cards that are lined the shelves at any Hallmark store. I joked once about starting our own, like, line of age-appropriate birthday cards. It's just very, you know, people shouldn't have to live by the old rules and stereotypes of ageism. I was out biking the other day, and we ran into a couple who were clearly older, and we stopped to talk to them, and they were both 85, and they're out in their biking shorts, and, you know, they biked from Pittsburgh to Fairport. So it shouldn't be looked at as that, wow, that's so surprising. That should be like, or they shouldn't even be doing that. Why not have them do that?
But Hallmark may say, but we have to be able to laugh at ourselves, and that's all we're trying to do.
But I think everything, you know, as you talked about, you know, with racism, even subtle things make, you know, can stick in people. And I think every time we see it now in terms of ageism, we have to call it out because it does hurt people. And just like the gentleman that texted you, he can't get a job. I'm going to tell you, I believe in part it's because of age because we see it all the time.
We're going to work through some of the other questions that Lifespan deals with all the time as we talk about the age wave. I'm so out of touch at times. You get your head down in things, and I'd never heard the term age wave. Is that a common term now?
No, it's you know, it's known among demographers and people who work in the field of aging. But there was a book published by Ken Dykewald. He's a well-known guru on aging about, oh, God, a dozen years ago maybe now. And he's followed that up with Age Power and different, but it was a book that when it came out, we came to live by because it really talked about how life, it talks about how life used to be very linear. You know, you were born, you went to school, you got a job, you got married, you had kids, and then you died. And now life is very cyclical, or it can be, where you can do multiple things multiple times over. You know, you go back to school in your 60s or 70s and get another degree if you want to. You can have kids, and, you know, certain people can have kids in later life. You can be married several times over, obviously, and all that. So life is not this linear pattern anymore. It's very cyclical. And so the age wave is the term that we're all using to really describe this coming, really, it's a tsunami also. It's called the silver tsunami. And politicians and communities, you know, it's really not on the radar yet, and it should be.
Well, when it comes to living longer, there are a couple of issues related to the so-called age wave or the silver tsunami. That's an interesting term for it, that I think are related. And one of them is that Americans over the age of 65 have a desire to stay engaged and productive. And again, part of that dovetails with what we've been talking about, whether it's part-time jobs, increased activity, increased physical activity, trying to stay healthy, physically fit late in life. But there's also a concern that we're going to live longer. You know, that there will be more of us who will reach 90, 95, maybe 100. And we will probably live healthily longer through our 60s, 70s, maybe even our 80s. But eventually, we may need some care. And the other challenge that the American Geriatric Society finds is that we need to train more Americans in how to care for older adults, particularly because, unlike 100 years ago, 50 years ago, families are more likely to be disparate. You know, kids will grow up and they're in different cities, maybe different states. And the notion of just having a phone call and having a family member come care for you is not as easy for older Americans. Is that fair?
I think family caregiving is a huge issue. And you just named just some of the issues of why it's huge. First, I have to start out by saying, even though families are all over the country, all over the world, a lot of long-distance caregivers, but still 80% of all long-term care is provided by the family, but there's just fewer family members. So what we see are families all the time doing extraordinary caregiving, usually working, usually have children too, that sandwich generation, but still caring for their parents as best as they can. Some of the issues they talk to us about is that they're ill prepared to take care of a loved one after they leave the hospital, not trained for that kind of medical work. They don't know where to get unbiased information. We always say, of course, call Lifespan about options that are available to make sure their loved one is safe. And they really, what we find is families really do want to care for their older loved ones.
What can you do then when you talk about getting information on how to do a better job caring? I know a lot of people who've been in the position that says, I'm not trained in geriatric care. I can't be responsible for my aging mom or my aging dad, not because they don't care, but because they're worried that I'm not qualified. I can't do this. What can be done?
Well, Lifespan is really putting together, and we have educational sessions running right now to educate folks. We will be training folks on how to do that. And coincidentally, I believe it's today in the New York State Legislature, the CARE Act is going through the legislature and really so that when a loved one, an older adult, leaves the hospital has to talk to the family caregiver in addition to the person being discharged to make sure they understand the discharge and care requirements for that individual.
So what happens right now, unfortunately, is when people call us, it's often the crisis happened. You know, they were hoping mom wouldn't fall, but then mom fell. So that precipitates the need for information to locate what services can be brought into the home, to locate informal paid caregivers, to look at what different housing options are available. And, you know, 30 years ago, you went from your home into a nursing home, skilled nursing home, and that is certainly not the case anymore. There's so many different levels of housing. And people are confused by that and what they offer and how much they cost and who can get in and how you do it. So that crisis precipitates 10 to 20 more questions of how do I deal with all of this? And having just gone through 15 years of caring for a mom with Alzheimer's, you know, there's a lot of burden that goes back to the family to say, you know, how do we do this? You know, how do I give my mom a shower? You know, I've never done that before, but ultimately that's what it comes down to at certain points. So it's just very difficult for families. And, you know, one of the things we're doing right now is we want to be more of a resource, and we're trying to actually, we're in the middle of a campaign to really raise more funds so that we can be more of a resource to families as this number keeps growing.
Well, let me read a comment from a listener named Kate who just wrote the program and said, Evan, my husband and I recently took in my mother-in-law. Some of our family was surprised, like it wasn't our job to do that. And I have to admit that that attitude made me sad. Of course it was our job, she says. But we just heard that 80% of caregivers are still family. So it's not an epidemic of family not being available, even if it's maybe less than it was 50 or 100 years ago. Is Kate's story, you know, family sort of maybe finding the idea, not their job, is that an outlier? Do you hear more of that? I mean, Kate's saying that that made her sad to hear family essentially telling her, you don't have to do this.
No, I don't think that's true at all. I think that families, they don't think of themselves as caregivers. They think of themselves as just taking care of mom or dad or whoever. And they try to do that to the best of their ability. But again, sometimes there's one daughter living here and, you know, there's more siblings living across the country. So it falls to the one daughter who's living here or son. And that becomes an issue of, you know, the burden of care on one person. But I don't think we see that.
I don't think we do either. Maybe, you know, they were referring to, too, a lot of, I don't know if a lot of older adults now move in with their adult children because everyone works. So, I mean, you know, maybe a little bit less of that, but I still see family caregivers, quite frankly, stepping up to the plate all the time. And I agree with Mary Rose. Most of the time, these family members would not consider themselves a caregiver. They would consider themselves a son or a daughter, and that's what you do for mom and dad.
In a moment, we're going to get to your phone calls, and I see the phone's starting to ring. It's 844-295-TALK if you want to join the conversation as we talk about the so-called age wave and caring for older Americans for many years. We're living longer. We should be thrilled about that, and now we just want to make sure that we are prepared for that, whether it's ourselves, maybe our parents or family members or friends. 844-295-8255. The number is toll-free, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Anne-Marie Cook and Mary Rose McBride from Lifespan are here, and your phone calls next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Henrietta Supervisor Jack Moore says he will not resign, and he says he's not a racist, despite being caught on camera making some remarks about African-Americans who live in the city of Rochester. We'll talk to the reporter who broke the story, and our panel looks at what racism truly means, personal versus systemic racism, and more. Join the conversation next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Lucas Greenhouses in Fairport, serving the Rochester region for more than 30 years. The nursery offers locally grown plants, from annuals and perennials to vegetables and herbs. Lucas Greenhouses, grown right here. LucasGH.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our first phone caller is Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. I have kind of a practical hodgepodge kind of question. I wonder if the manufacturing of various items and stuff are being paid attention or made by people that are have some of the issues of aging themselves, so they could, you know, have better problem solving. Because, you know, there's a million examples, but, you know, how almost impossible things to open. The issue of, like, things like cell phones that don't come that easily in different colors. So, you know, when you have a black or a gray, it's much easier for them to be misplaced because they blend in with everything else that's going on around you. That and the other thing, it's all these little kind of things that can be problems. You know, it's one thing, I know Lifespan has a list of people sometimes that can help with household fix-uppers, but one of the things that I see as a real issue is when people are downsizing their homes or moving furniture from one part of the house to the other and it's heavy, you know, you have movers, but who do you get, an older people, calling older people to help move things is probably not a great idea. So those kinds of resources, there's a lot of things that, you know, I would like to see people kind of come together and, you know, and maybe form small businesses or whatever. But those kinds of issues are practical, everyday things that can give you a lot of frustration.
Bonnie, thanks for the phone call. Yeah, and go ahead, Anne-Marie Cook.
No, I was just going to say absolutely. And Bonnie, every day I see more and more business ideas pop up and technology ideas to help older adults stay at home longer. So maybe some of the ideas you mentioned will be picked up by somebody.
And there are a couple of companies locally that specialize in helping people downsize for the move, and we have a list of those. But also adaptive technology. We actually have had a couple people in the office just in the last couple of months showing off different technologies to make sure people are taking their medications on schedule, that they weigh themselves if they're diabetic. And it all happens electronically over, you know, Wi-Fi, and it gets broadcast to a caregiver or to a doctor's office. So, you know, there are more and more companies looking at things like this. And I think, again, with a growing population, there are the entrepreneurs out there who are going to keep seeing these things.
Well, absolutely. To Bonnie's point about just the functionality of from packaging that's hard to open that she mentioned, there's plenty of packaging that's hard for me to open. And I couldn't agree more with that. But that is a very important point. If there's money to be made and there are boomers who are aging, someone hopefully will address that. And if you've got questions about just day-to-day household objects or products that you think there's someone in your family or you yourself wish it were easier or more accessible or there's a different form that's a little more user-friendly, I bet you if it exists, Lifespan knows about it. And
that's right.
And you can call Lifespan if you want. What's the number?
244-8400.
Okay, so, you know, but to Bonnie's point there, I mean, I think there are a lot of people who will relate to that. And get colored cell phone cases for aging family members. That is a great idea. It really is. And we've seen it in our own family. It's a really, really good idea. 844-295-TALK. We'll get back to the phone calls in just a moment. But I want to circle back to a point that we talked about living longer. But at Lifespan, they've been emphasizing a point that a lot of us are living longer with chronic illness. What kinds of chronic illness?
Oh, you know, the whole range, COPD, arthritis, diabetes, heart, lung conditions, hip, knee replacements that don't go well. So there are, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on trying to get people to obviously avoid those diseases as they go into older adulthood. But again, thanks to medical advances, it's keeping people alive longer. But again, sometimes you are living with these chronic diseases. We just started a couple of years ago a series of workshops called Chronic Disease Self-Management, where it's really teaching you how to better manage your own chronic disease. So that you're, you know, you're communicating better with your doctor. You know what the content of foods is, so that, you know, you can bring your insulin levels to where they should be. So, but again, the chronic disease thing just makes it a little bit harder for family caregivers, because it requires, you know, more doctor's appointments, more everything, more medications.
Well, let me grab our next phone call. It's Ed in North Chile. Go ahead, Ed.
Yes, hello. I just participated in a large EHR, electronic healthcare records implementation in a long-term care facility, and have a finance and background. And the pressures that those organizations are under to cut costs while they serve more people, while the payment systems are all changing and being managed by insurance companies that are profit-motivated, those pressures are immense right now. And they're only going to grow as everything is going to be driven by the metrics coming out of these systems. That's another wave that's coming that's going to peak in about 3 to 4 years.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. And I think what we've learned with all these healthcare changes is, one, we couldn't sustain sort of the financial burden of providing all healthcare. So everything's changing, not only at a federal level, but at a state level. But we certainly now, it's a tremendous pressure, as you said, on healthcare providers. I will also include Lifespan in there to cut costs at all points, to serve more people, and to try to figure out the right mix. And I have to say, there's a lot of people trying to work on that, but it's not easy, as you pointed out.
Did that answer, Ed, any follow-up there?
Well, I the language is that we're going to, by efficiencies, we're going to gain the money needed for innovation, but that assumes a level of automation or something that nobody wants to buy in terms of their own care. Nobody wants less care. Nobody wants fewer people tending to their needs when they're in trouble. They want more. So that the pressures to cut costs and the number of people who are going to be asking for care and asking for health services, they're on a collision course. And nobody in the industry, and I'm also on a board of another facility, nobody in the industry has an answer for what the next 5 to 10 years look like. If you get anybody to be honest, they'll tell you, well, we don't really know what it's going to look like 10 years from now. We're just trying to figure out how to get through the next year or two.
Well, the next 5 to 10 years is a problem, but so is the next 50 years. When we go from 45 million older adults right now to almost 100 million in a little less than 60 years, what will our country look like then? By 2020, Medicare and Social Security are going to comprise almost 50% of the federal budget. You know, if we don't look at costs and we don't look at how we're providing health care, this country is going to be in big trouble. So I think that's, you know, obviously one of the big impetuses right now to look at costs and controlling it through efficiencies. But also, you know, Americans are going to have to look at the kind of care they want, that they think they deserve, or, you know, we all want. Right now, in Medicare, you know, an enormous amount of money is spent in the last year of a person's life. So there are going to be some big challenges that we all have to look at, whether it's through end-of-life planning, decision-making, those kinds of things.
Back to the phones, and this is Carol in Rush. Go ahead, Carol.
Hi. Yes. Previously, I worked as a home health aide, and I also took care of my own mom for a number of years. And one of the things that we had an issue with, and I saw other people have issues with, was pet care. And I was wondering if your guests had any resources for people that might need help having a dog walked or litter boxes cleaned or pets taken to the vet.
The answer is yes, Carol. I mean, you know, it's funny. It doesn't always arise top of mind for me. But as you know from being, you know, doing one of the hardest jobs I think there is, home health care, those pets mean a lot to people. There are a few programs in the area in which, you know, you can get pet respite while somebody's in the hospital or additional care. But it's an issue that, quite frankly, I don't think we spend enough time on because pets are so important to people.
It's another entrepreneurial idea for someone out there.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. It's a good reminder, you know, that is part of the family. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. A couple of questions that have come in online. Paul says, can your guest say something about the, and I'm trying to read my own writing as I scribbled, about the possible value of assisted living. I get the sense that there is a negative view of families who recommend assisted living for relatives. We had to have that conversation recently in my family, and it was not easy.
I think placing any older adult, you know, is never an easy discussion for families because it means the older adult obviously is more dependent. But in terms of a negative view of assisted living, we have not seen that. You know, it's one of those, once again, multiple levels of care that have sprung up over the last 10, 20 years to help older adults. And assisted living, quite frankly, is a wonderful option for many people who need that level of care.
It's also usually an expensive option. And again, it's one of those questions that people go, okay, you know, we see all these places being built around town. What do they all do? And, you know, what am I paying for? What am I not paying for? What additional help do we need to put in? But, you know, sometimes a move to a community can really help an older adult because they're getting regular nutrition, there's activities. You know, sometimes it's a better situation for them than living a home alone. But again, it's all dependent on your own family situation.
And let me also say, Paul, that I hope that you didn't get any sort of sentiment from the conversation we've been having this hour that it would be a negative thing to make that recommendation. Every person's different. Every family's different. We were simply responding to Kate's email from earlier in the hour talking about taking in her mother-in-law and whether those options are even there for family members. But I don't think anyone was intending to imply that it's a negative. I mean, I know those conversations can be difficult. And one term that I've seen come up here and there recently that I didn't used to see is enriched senior living. The Northfield, for example, is a community that I've heard of and some others. I don't necessarily know Does that mean something different?
It sure does. It's another level of care, another level of care in the continuum of care for older adults. So enriched housing will provide meals and medication management for folks. Maybe not the same intensive level of care as assisted living, for instance, but as we've brought up before, it used to be you were either home or in a nursing home. And one of our most popular education classes are understanding and learning housing options for older adults and the cost of those options and how to pay for them, because it is confusing.
Enriched living is generally less expensive than assisted living?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
But the term assisted, I mean, there's a state definition for the term assisted living program, and then there's what people in general think of as assisted living, like moving just into a senior housing community. And, you know, a lot of those we internally talk about as being independent living, because you get an apartment, you may have one meal a day, you might get some housekeeping, but it's still kind of independent, and you can come and go as you like, and blah blah. So there's the community sort of viewpoint and definition of what's assisted living, and then there's the aging services viewpoint and definition. So again, this is why it's all confusing.
It's also why Lifespan's here, to help us answer those questions if you have them. This is Carlene. Go ahead, Carlene.
Yes, having helped a mother for a number of years going through independent, assisted, et cetera, and an uncle, I became aware of the fact that of a serious problem that I think Lifespan could do research on, and that is the situation of short staffing. And it didn't matter which fine facility my mother was at, but the standards are not set in stone for how many nurses, how many aides you need to have on, for instance, in the evening. And it would be a different situation if call bells had a registered number on them where you could see what time and how long it took for someone to answer it. Because what often happens is people who get seriously injured are from falls, and they ring to go to the bathroom, and they wait, and they wait, and they wait, and then they fall and break their hip. And this happens so many times that it's unbelievable that no one has looked into the fact that there aren't sufficient people to answer the needs. And when one inquires, and I don't care if you're paying $5,000 or $12,000 a month, the fact that they didn't have state standards in place for staffing under these headings was shocking. And so what you have is you have people going into the hospital with a broken arm, wrist, hip, whatever, coming back out, and they may not even be able to live in the facility where they came from. So I would love to see Lifespan look into why do we not have standardized limits or standards for nurses' aides in the evening. For instance, if you were have 40 patients on a wing, how many aides do they think is adequate for, you know, 11 to 7 or whatever the shift might be? Because having worked in the field many years ago, the staffing standards were actually higher. So has Lifespan heard many complaints about this issue?
Thanks for the call, Carlene.
Yeah, and in fact, Lifespan serves as the ombudsman or the advocate in long-term care in a 9-county area. You're absolutely right. That's one of the main complaints that we receive in all 9 counties. I think it's over 10,000 residents that you would be talking about, is the call bell issue in terms of when somebody presses the call bell and not answered, and what the resident feels like is a appropriate length of time. You're also right in that there's best practice standards in terms of staffing, but there are not required or mandatory staffing levels. But I did make a note, a mental note of what you said, and I want to check in to see if other states have that, and we promise to look into that issue.
And the worker shortage, you know, is acute, and it's going to become more acute. for people working in nursing homes, for home care workers, for private duty, home care aides, and, you know, and that's also an issue sometimes of pay. So there's multiple things going on. You know, a nursing home may be able to, maybe trying to hire more workers, but, you know, there is a shortage and there's going to be, it's going to continue.
James writes to the program, do your guests support legislation to offer options to die with dignity? I don't know about legislation in this state. I think he may be referring to Oregon, and I think there's a couple of states that have death with dignity laws. I don't know that Lifespan takes positions on legislation like that, but
We have not taken a position. I haven't read anything in New York State, so I can't comment on it.
Okay. Thank you, James, for the question, and I'm sure that's a conversation we will see on this program in the future. And let me begin to wrap up the conversation this hour as we talk about the age wave with a question. We talk a lot about boomers as an age wave, but, you know, there are subsequent generations, and I don't know the stats on subsequent generations, but clearly it's not just a boomer generation issue that 20 years from now, 30 years from now, we're looking at significant challenges. So what does this community need to do? What's a short list checklist that has to really start now? As you've been saying, start now before problems really blossom out of control.
Yeah, and Lifespan's been looking at that. Thank you for bringing it up. And really, our goal is to help Rochester be a great place to age well. And what we mean by that is not only be a great place to raise a family, but also age in this community. And we've been doing a lot of work, and the World Health Organization, as well as AARP, has issued different domains of livability. And Lifespan's looking at that right now to see if we can go community-wide and then community-by-community to talk about safe streets and walkability and developing mobility management transportation plans and really spreading the word on some of these evidence-based programs to help people take on their own health care. Chronic disease self-care management, as Mary Rose mentioned, or falls prevention, and really begin to look at community-wide level of how to age well and age well in this community.
But there are also very specific things that we're trying to do. You know, we've always kind of, the aging services world has always kind of lived outside of the medical community. So it's never really, what we do has never really been merged with what happens in your doctor's office or what happens at the hospital. So we're really looking at, you know, how do we better integrate with the doctor and the doctor's office so that the doctor knows that you're not taking your medication because guess what? You don't have transportation to go get it, or you're not eating because there's no food in your refrigerator, or your, you know, home environment isn't safe or whatever. So we're trying to look at how do we provide that outside view for the medical community so that it's not so siloed what happens in the doctor's office versus what you need at home. Another thing is, again, providing more caregiver support, but also, again, helping people figure out, all right, if I retire at 65 or 70 or whatever, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? How do I want to spend my time? What's sort of the next thing in my life? So we want to look at how we can help people sort of make those decisions, you know, age better, longer, live longer, better.
I would be remiss if I didn't also bring up the idea of seniors in poverty. It's come up on this program in the past, and I know it is a sensitive one for some because we've heard from people who have said they had family members who were embarrassed to admit that, again, we talked about what happened with the markets in 2007, 2008, 2009. We've heard from people who've said, I've had family members embarrassed to admit they couldn't afford go and get food, prescription
right.
drugs, things like that. And so last word on that, if you confront that issue, whether it's yourself or family members, what would you tell them about confronting those kinds of challenges within your own family?
Well, we ask people first, you know, please give us a call because oftentimes people aren't taking advantage of the benefits that they actually could take advantage of to help those situations. But certainly older adults also are in poverty. And we talk a lot about children in this community, as we should, but there's older adults, and hopefully they'll also get attention as we look at anti-poverty efforts in this community.
lifespan, the phone number, if you want to call and whether it's get information, learn more about the funds and the programs that they're trying to raise and do, if you want to volunteer to help drive, et cetera, et cetera. The number for Lifespan is?
244-8400.
And you're online where?
Rochester, or LifespanRochester.org.
LifespanRochester.org. Thanks to my guests for the hour from Lifespan, Anne-Marie Cook and Mary Rose McBride. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And short break. We're talking about the controversy that sparked in Henrietta this week. And we're talking about racism next hour. Stay with us.